Something coming faster than any of us can imagine and will change our lives in the most dramatic ways is AI.
And while AI used to sound freaky to me and just something that was going to take over my world, it really would have revolutionized my practice had I stuck around. Many of you know, I got so burnt out from charting. It was the big reason I left medicine because I was frustrated with the EMRs, the clunkiness, and the amount of time it took to learn them. Not only that, but not being able to sit and connect with a patient and look them in the eye, like one-on-one while you're actually interacting with them, the whole reason we went into medicine, not to do paperwork.
Yeah, so that's why May and I have started working with Lindy.ai, which is fascinating. They help you produce the most efficient notes, fully customizable, which is different than some other AI products, so you can do what you do best, which is see patients and let the artificial intelligence scribe do the dirty work for you.
Yeah, not only do you get the perfect patient notes the way you want, written in any format, for whatever specialty you're in, and maybe you're in ophthalmology or vet medicine, it will also create the note, scribe and send the patient follow-up instructions, referral letters, consultation notes. It's amazing. Lindy is offering our listeners a 7-day trial to experience the difference of their AI medical scribe. Go sign up at lindy.ai/bsfree to get started. That is Lindy, lindy.ai/bsfree.
Finally, a source of raw, real, and honest information on healthcare issues that matter most. Welcome to BS Free MD. From the latest medical information to how to stay sane as a doctor or a patient, no subject is taboo, no BS is allowed. Now, let's welcome your hosts, Drs. May and Tim Hindmarsh.
Welcome, everyone, to another episode of BS Free MD, where Tim and I here, your hosts, Dr. Smith and Tim Hindmarsh, cut through the medical jargon and red tape with his humor, insight, and no BS. And today we're getting into a topic that hits close to home for us and many of our colleagues.
Oh, boy.
Physician contracts. So we'll share a little bit, as much as we can, of our personal experiences. We faced a lot of challenges where some employers maybe wouldn't want to honor agreements or even meet in the middle on agreeable terms. It can be very tricky. It can be sunshine and roses when you first sign. And then, as I say, the gloves come off when you want to part ways. And so that's why we're here with our guest today, Kyle Clausen, CEO of Resolve Physician Contract Review. Kyle comes from Pipestone, Minnesota, close to our homeland, and boasts an impressive background with an undergraduate degree from North Dakota State University, a law degree from the University of Laverne College of Law, and an LLM in taxation from Boston University.
I thought they didn't like taxation in Boston. Didn't they throw a bunch of tea into the harbor?
I'm cutting you off now. As a dedicated advocate for physicians, Kyle has over a decade of experience in physician contract and compensation, specializing in legal, financial, and strategic aspects of employment agreements. His work is backed by the American Health Lawyers Association, and through Resolve, Kyle has assisted thousands of physicians in ensuring fair treatment in their employment contracts. I love that. And here's some even better news. He's married to an ophthalmologist, so his personal life is as full as his professional one. He's got 3 children, a dog, and he obviously knows the ins and outs of medicine, being married to a physician. So welcome to the show, Kyle. Thanks for being here. Thanks for supporting BS Free MD as well. And we always have fun. Sometimes people think, oh, physician contracts is going to be dry and boring, but we never, everything
well,
on the
no,
show,
no,
we make
no.
fun.
It's dry and boring until your life depends on it. Because
exactly. And we can attest to
we
that.
We can attest to that. Like months and months of, if you don't negotiate how you're going to leave before you start working, you will later.
Yeah, exactly. Let's start with, actually, I want to start with give us a little bit of insight. So you're married, your wife's an ophthalmologist. Is that what influenced you to kind of get into this field of work, or were you doing this already before you guys were together?
Yeah, no. So I thought I was going to be a tax lawyer, right? That's why I went to Boston and was learning all that tax law. But she obviously was ophthalmology, went into medicine, had a great opportunity to learn about that. And Resolve was actually founded by a physician about a decade ago. And so through that, you know, learned about maybe some of those headaches you guys are talking about and thought, man, there's really a need here to advocate and to help out the physician world. And so I don't do much tax work at this point, a little bit, but mostly it's all about healthcare and healthcare employment law.
Oh, well, we totally appreciate having someone, I would say, on the inside that also has the insight, you know, being married to a physician. I think that maybe helps you out a little bit compared to some other attorneys that don't quite get some of that. Cause I know that when we've worked with ours in the past, sometimes we'd have to like explain how the system and things worked in a little more detail for him to understand it.
Well, I think there's a bias. I think that physicians trust people too much, and companies know that, and they trust no one, and they use that against most physicians when it comes to contracting. And I think doctors lose sight of the fact that they actually have a lot of clout in those contracts. There's tons of physician jobs all over the country. You are not just plug and play. You're very difficult to replace. And I think, you know, you can tell us how we can use that to our advantage, because I think it's something that most doctors just go, yeah, a contract looks okay. It's safe. It's boilerplate. It's like it is for everybody. And they just sign it, and they don't realize when something, if they do want to move or if they do want to leave, they may be owing money back to the company. Like, I mean, there's tons of red flags in there.
Yeah. And I think some of that is because of just the life cycle of medicine. And you guys have lived this, so I'm preaching to the choir here. But you know, you go to med school, right? It's this application, you know, please choose me. It's residency and matching is the same thing. It's, you know, please select me. And then you leave, and it's the first time that that power should flip, right? There's a major shortage of physicians. You guys drive all the revenue in healthcare, or most of it. And so you should have a lot of power at that point in time. But a lot of physicians don't understand the business of medicine. They're never trained on it. They don't care about it, probably, right, while they're learning how to become a physician. And so, you know, you get to that step, and a lot of them will just go through and trust, like you said, trust that this is okay for them, and they'll sign off on something, and they don't have any idea of what that divorce, right, looks like down the road of, do I owe the signing bonus back? Do I have a non-compete? Do I have tail coverage? Like all the stuff that could go wrong, they maybe have just skipped over entirely and just focused on, right, when they're going to work or where they're going to work or something like that.
So let's start with, if you can, give us like an overview of some of the common things.
Pitfalls.
Pitfalls. Oh, I was going to say things that you should be looking for, but you could do pitfalls too. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, we try to make every contract specific to the individual, right? Because everybody comes in with different needs and wants. And, you know, I don't like non-competes personally, because I think they remove leverage from a physician. And for those listeners that don't know what a non-compete is, basically it says, if we stop working with each other, right, the contract ends, you can't work in a certain area for a certain amount of time. And so
right. And that's a big deal in a place, you know, with a lot of rural areas, not a lot of urban places. So states, even like Washington, Oregon, I'm sure it's North, South Dakota, Minnesota, all of that. It's where you're can be stuck.
No, so yep. They can fire you and you have to move.
Yeah. So the way that those are drafted usually, right, is that it says, regardless of how the contract ends, we're going to enforce this. And so even if we're in breach of contract, for example, the employer, yeah. Or even if we just let you go for no reason because we changed our mind or we're canceling a service line, right, that you're still not allowed to go to work in those areas. And so I don't, you know, we would hope that a judge, if you ever challenge that, would say, hey, that doesn't seem right. That's not reasonable. But that's an expensive process to go through. You know, a lot of physicians don't want to go through litigation on an employment contract. And so we think preventative medicine, so to speak, on that, right, is getting it right on the way in is going to save you a lot of headaches on the way out.
Are you seeing states changing those laws? Because there is an attorney friend of ours sent us a state law in Oregon that is being pushed heavily,
yeah,
that actually removes specifically for physicians. Mm-hmm. non-competes and non-disparagement clauses, which is amazing. I don't trust it because I don't trust anything that comes out of Salem, Oregon at all. I mean, sure. Thank you. You guys legalized meth and heroin. Great. So I tend to be a little bit, you know, what's behind this.
Sure.
But I think the state itself is, like, you know, well, May was asking me, she's like, where the hell did this come from? And I said, I think they're so short of doctors that they want to remove any kind of business encumbrance from physicians just continuing to work.
Yeah. So some states have, right? And this is still a state-by-state issue. So Oregon and some others are limiting them. Maybe they're limited on time or they're limited on scope, you know, whatever it is. The FTC is also talking about this on a national basis, maybe wiping out non-competes. And they're supposed to give an opinion on that, you know, sometime this year in 2024. I'm a little bit skeptical of all those because we'll have clients in states like California. And California's had a ban on non-competes for physicians for a while. But employers will still put them in the contract because they hope that physicians don't know that there's a law, right, that says you can't have this. And they'll just read the document and comply with it anyway. So we're hopeful, right, that there's a ban, right, because that's good for every doctor in the country to be able to move around freely. And if your employer does something wrong, you get to choose a different one, right, or go out and start your own practice. But if they don't, we think the only way to do that is on the way in, right, when you have that leverage, when it's they're recruiting you and wining and dining you and all that stuff, that you use some of that power at that point to make sure you have flexibility later on.
So how often do you see them actually enforce that legally? Like, have you seen when someone's taken them to court and it's been upheld? Because I heard too that in court of law that they can't really uphold that anymore. Is that true?
I think that's the general impression. I would think that there's very little case law on it, right? Meaning that there's very few things that have gone all the way through and not settled, right?
Right.
And you don't have great history on, yes, these are unenforceable all the time. And it's going to be different by specialty. It's going to be different by area, right? What's the draw? What's the density, right? Mm-hmm. How many patients are there? And so I think in a lot of online forums, right, that physicians are in, I think there's a lot of talk of, oh, they can't enforce that. I would be really, really careful on that because I think that they can enforce it. We see them enforce it. You know, I don't know if you guys have that experience personally or not, but it can be a major pain if you're having disagreements on the way out because it just wrecks, right? It wrecks where you can plan to work. You don't have, you know, a decision on that yet. You don't have, clarity on what you can be applying to. So, again, I think you just have to do your best to make sure you know what you're getting into. And then worst case scenario, you challenge it right later on.
No, I really like what you said about putting that on the bargaining power at the beginning. I mean, if there's truly a shortage and you are in the power seat in negotiation, then the smart thing would be to try to have that like just abolished period, say,
right.
Sorry.
Well, like, you kind of, yeah, but it's hard. It's like, again, like what Kyle said is so true. Like you come out of residency, you come out of being matched, you're just beat up. And doctors have this terrible imposter syndrome. And I think, you know, May has discussed this with some of her colleagues. I think it is a bigger issue for some female physicians as well. You know, I'm more of a caring nurturer than, you know, the tough guy, and then you just get destroyed in these contracts and then you want to leave and you think you have no power. And you set the tone for the rest of the employment based on how you go in. And that's really, really critical. Because what's the national average on how long people even stay in physician jobs now? It's like 3 or 4 years.
Yeah, it's really low. So, you know, there's a statistic that says about 50% of all trainees will leave their first job within 2 years. But now we've had that huge shift towards employment, right, as well, where it used to be you might go out and join a colleague in private practice and 2 or 3 years from now you'd be a partner. That exists, but it's really rare now, right? I mean, it's like 75% to 90%, depending on specialty, of all the residents coming out are walking into an employed model. So they're working for a health system, academics, right? Something that's owned by private equity. And so in those situations, your contracts are essentially 1 year contracts, right? They auto renew, but if it's not working out for the employer, they're going to let you go. And then in turn, right, we have a lot of physicians that are, you know, burnout's a big word, and dissatisfaction, you know, whatever you want to call it. You know, I think a lot of that starts at the contract level, right, of what they've promised you versus what they're delivering on. And so they are moving. So, yeah, I mean, it's not uncommon to have now physician careers with 2, 3, 4, 5 employers, right, where it used to be maybe 1 or 2.
Yeah, so
right.
So it's really, you have to go into this marriage like you're Elizabeth Taylor, and you're expecting that there's going to be several husbands, you know, and you might even be married to Richard Burton twice. It may happen. So planning the exit is critically important. Yeah. Critically important. I mean, stuff like tail coverage. I mean, we talked to one of our colleagues who's an OBGYN, and she's like, you know, tail coverage, depending on the state, I mean, it could be $100,000 that you're paying to cover yourself for leaving a job, just so that if you do get sued, they don't take your, you know, house in retirement.
Yeah. And OB is probably the worst, right? I mean, their tail number is the biggest, but nobody wants to have a $20,000 to $100,000 check to have to write, right, on the way out of a job. And, you know, a lot of the employers, right, the systems will say, oh, your next employer will pick that up, right? Don't worry about it. There's no reason for them to pick that up, right? I mean, why would they take on additional risk, right, under their insurance policy? And so that's another thing, like non-competes, right? You need to negotiate on the way in. You need to be aware of what you're signing. If it's a non-negotiable for the employer, right, they may say, hey, we can't, we won't. You at least need to know what that cost is going to look like, right? So you're factoring that in as you're comparing offers side by side, because there's real value in those things.
I didn't even know what, I think when we first started, I'd never even heard of tail coverage. I mean, it was just like, what?
Well, coming
from Canada to the US.
Yeah, coming from Canada.
I'm like, we're going to get sued.
Yeah, well, there's the, but there, the thing in Canada is there's one malpractice carrier.
Right, right.
And they never settle. Like they never, the only time they settle is if they're like, you were negligent.
Yeah.
So virtually nobody gets sued, which also brings the cost down. It's one time where a monopoly actually works in favor of the people serving.
Yeah.
So what are some of the other things that you advise people to look for and all that legalese that I can never discern anyway?
Yeah,
some Shakespeare wrote it.
So there are definitely some problems in the legalese. We tend to find, though, that there's just as many problems in the areas that you would think, right, people would be reading over and paying attention to, like, when do I work and where do I work and do I supervise APPs or don't I, right? Like, what am I getting into, the duties and responsibilities? That's really broad as a starting point for a lot of contracts. And we see, I think, personal opinion, most of the burnout comes from not compensation, right? It's not termination provisions. It's just, what am I doing every day? And why am I taking more call than you told me I was going to, right? And why am I supervising a bunch of APPs that I didn't want to do? Why am I working Fridays when you told me I could work 4 days a week, right? And it's, I try not to be, I don't know, overly critical, maybe is the right word, of employers. But I do think you see it over and over and over and over, and it's hard to trust what's written, and it's hard to trust what's, you know, verbally promised in an interview, because administrators change jobs too. So just like, right, physicians are going to hop from one to the next, the person who hired you probably won't be there when you have a problem 4 years from now, right? Or they're in a different role. And so what are they going to do? They're going to take up the document. They're going to say, well, it doesn't say you're on call 1 and 4, right? So now you're on 1 and 3, and then, well, that stinks, right? And so we think defining that stuff and being extremely clear, or having some type of, you know, veto power on that for the physician, is really, really important to stop some of that burnout early on.
No, that's a really good point. So, I mean, we could talk for a long time about this, because it's things that we've had that come up. Well, even the office, I mean, this is going to sound silly, but even the office in which you must work, I mean, it started off in like, we, you know, initially joined a group. It was tiny. It was like two entities, and then things happen and the groups merge and you have all these communities coming together, you know, fast forward years. And then it's like, well, we're going to set up this pop-up tent kind of on the side and this satellite office in a trailer or whatever. And I'm like, I don't want to work in there. It's not safe. Like legal, it's actually frightening. The environment was awful. No, all kinds
just,
of things.
No. Let's just explain exactly what it was. It was a converted semi trailer in a truck stop parking lot. What could possibly go wrong?
Yeah. So I'm like, you're going to have three women
working there by themselves at night.
The only people,
nothing could possibly go wrong.
No, if something happens, I will literally run up to one of the truckers who's probably packing heat and knock on the door for help. But so when, and I won't even get into, like, you know, when we had the toilet backup and it blew sewage all over one of the patient's cars and stuff happened. What, I mean, when that's not, how do you define or negotiate for that stuff where it's like, how would I foresee in the future that this will ever come? Like, you have to almost imagine circumstances.
I'm not working
to put it in a contract.
In the back of a semi.
What do you do about that?
Yeah. So it's hard to define, right? That situation. And that's a first for me. I've never heard of that one coming up, but we do hear all the time that there's a new satellite location, right? Or, right, systems merge and now we've got 10 practice locations instead of 5.
Yeah.
And I bought a house on the west side of town. They're asking me to drive to the east side. It's like an hour away, right? And now that stinks. It's wrecked my family life. And so the way that I would encourage you to try to solve that is just to say, here's my practice location, right? With an address listed out or, you know, something that defines it. And then any other location I have to give consent to. I have to have mutual agreement on that, right? So then if they tell you to go work in a trailer in a parking lot, you can say no. And if they force you to, that's breach of contract on their end, right? So you can structure things where you don't have to anticipate every situation, but still give you language that helps you control it.
I think that is a critical piece of the puzzle because, you know, we lived in the country and when we switched to urgent care, I mean, we could literally be working an hour and a half away because the entity was so geographically large, but population density was low.
Yeah.
And, you know, the job I have now, I was very clear where I was going to work. It's very clear. And I'm like, okay, I'm going to have to be willing to drive or not take this job because they have seven places and you're going to work basically at all of them. And it was very black and white. I'm like, okay, I can live with that. You know, this is great.
But the trailer wasn't listed.
The trailer was not listed.
The trailer's never on those like recruitment postcards that you guys get, right? No. Like near a beautiful mountain. And
exactly.
Great work-life balance.
Yeah. But in your situation, right? I mean, if it's really clear that it's these seven and these seven only, and you go into that with full knowledge, that's probably okay, right? I mean, it's maybe not perfect, but at least you know. The situation where it's kind of that bait and switch is really what we want to avoid.
What about, here I am picking the scenarios now instead of letting you tell us the common things that... to watch out for. Well, so what about things of that, including like hourly type stuff? Cause you know, that changes too, especially in our field of work. It's like, well, the doors are open, especially in a clinic setting or urgent care. So different, like the doors are open from 8 to 8. So you're like, okay, the doors are open till 8, but now I'm here till midnight still because 50 people lined up at the door at 7:45. And that has happened pretty much. So then I'm there till 12:30 and I have to come back the next day for 8. I'm only getting, you know, I drive an hour each way. So I get 5 hours of sleep.
Yeah.
Is there any kind of stuff for that as working that into a contract or paying attention to that?
Yeah. I think you want to be careful on your schedule, right? Mm-hmm. So that sometimes if you're working urgent care, it's an hourly type of position. Sometimes they will delineate these are day shifts or these are swing shifts or these are night shifts or, you know, whatever the hour breakup looks like. And I do think you'd want to have some protection on that. Or if I work till whatever midnight, right, I don't have to come in the next day, right? It's kind of an off day that you'd build in. A lot of times there's different rates for compensation as well based on type of shift that you're working and, you know, weekends or holidays versus just a normal during the week. So I think you can solve for it. I think you'd want to be really clear on how many people are in that pool though and who you're sharing those times with and, you know, if there's any seniority that falls in there or somebody has a schedule that's been set for the last 5 years. I mean, all those things matter. And then I think you can craft language to protect yourself. Again, if you're running over, and this is not just for that situation, but even for things like charting, right? I mean, we talked to a ton of clients that are like, yeah, I work 8 to 5 in theory, right? But then I come home and I chart for 4 hours right on the EHR that stinks. And so, you know, building in admin time too, or kind of this block time for other things, I think can go a long way into, again, making it feel like what you signed up for.
So is that a common thing now where people are able to negotiate that in actual charting time, admin hours, and keep track? Good.
Yeah, we'll see a lot of, I mean, not the majority, but we'll see some contracts that'll delineate, you know, it's 0.9 for clinic patient-facing stuff and maybe a 0.1, so 4 hours a week for admin, which is probably not enough, right? But it's a start, right? And getting some of that split time, you know, effectuated in the document.
What about things like who did you ever have to advise people to have this written into their contract as far as who I who's my direct boss that's going to fire me or counsel me if I'm doing a good or poor job, instead of leaving it? That's another thing we've had where it's not really written in the contract who is managing you. And next thing you know, you've got these other powers that be come in and they're trying to discipline or do corrective. And I'm like, why are you here? And why are you talking to me? I don't, you know, you're some suit and I don't know.
We had a PA get released. She called me. I mean, it was a bad fit or whatever, you know, release without cause kind of deal. She had never met the person that was trying to fire her.
Yeah.
Like ever. She had no idea who it was. She didn't even know where he was on the org chart. This guy just shows up. They're always the blue blazer, right? They're always in the blue suit. And it's like, oh yeah, by the way. And then what they did is they told her, instead of just, you know, honoring the contract and paying her the 3 months and saying, give me your badge. Why am I leaving? We don't have to tell you. Okay. Done. Right. They said, well, no, you're going to leave in 3 months. We want you to work for three more months because the schedule's already made. Yeah. And I was like, you can burn the place down in 3 months. Why would they do that? That's dumb.
Yeah. Because they don't want to lose the revenue. Right. They want those paid visits. They want to, you know, they don't have a lot of planning sometimes where they bring in the locum coverage that they would need to cover that gap until they can hire somebody else. And so, we don't usually see this is my boss in the contract, right? Because again, those people change, but I do think you want to have some idea, right, on structure, especially if you're the only one in your specialty, right? Is then who do I report to, right? If there's a group of 30 of you, a lot of times there's a division lead or somebody, right, that's kind of in charge as your admin, who's also a colleague to some extent. But if not, right, if you're in one of those unique situations, I'd certainly want clarity on how decisions are made, because that's going to affect other things like marketing and, you know, who hires my scribe, who hires my receptionist, all that stuff that you guys need, right, to go along with it. You know, again, you may want some input on that before they just hire and fire people.
Okay. What else? Is there any other kind of common issues
that we haven't talked about? The one that I thought you guys would have some interest on, which is just getting paid, right? Like, how do we know if we're getting paid fairly? That's a big problem. And we see a ton of, and this is almost a double negative, but there's such a lack of transparency, right, in the market. And beyond just transparency in what you should be paid and what fair market value is, a lack of transparency on how that's calculated once you're in the system. And so if you're doing hourly work, right, or shift work, it's a little bit easy, right? Or it's just, you show up, you calculate it, count the shifts. But if you're on any type of production metric for collections or work RVUs or gross charges, right, which a lot of specialties are, we see a lot of smoke and mirrors with that, right? There's all these, you know, we can't pay you because of Stark arguments that are out there. We can't pay you because it's out of line with fair market value. And usually that's not true. I mean, we rarely see a contract that comes in where it's being paid so well that it might violate one of those laws. I mean, their job is to push down overhead, right? It's their job is to get labor costs as small as they can, which means your compensation needs to be driven down if they can do that. And so we find gaps all the time just in pay rates.
So that's what I kind of want to get into a little bit, because we often will have an argument amongst ourselves or other physicians about the whole thing of change. You know, we understand, like you said, if you're on an hourly rate, you're in the ER or urgent care, it's pretty easy to track. But you're right, if you're RVU driven procedures, how do you track that? And we hear that women will be paid less for the same job. I mean, is that a common thing? Is it all like negotiating behind the doors of how much like you get paid per year or salary, whether you're teaching, who you're supervising? I mean, is it really, do you see that?
Yeah, we see discrepancies all the time. And so whether it's, you know, male, female, right? Mm-hmm. Differences, whether it's somebody that's coming out that's has an immigration issue, right? They're on a J-1 visa. And so they need some immigration support. We see it just based on new hires versus somebody who's seasoned, right? They know that the person that's seasoned probably is going to call BS, right? To use your guys' call sign here.
Yep.
Right? Versus a new grad that they might get away with paying them less. And so because we see thousands of these across the country, right? And we see them with the same institutions. I mean, we've seen contracts where a work RVU rate is 55 for one. And then 3 months later, it's 50 for the next person because they're trying to save $5 per work RVU. We've seen contracts that have mistakenly gotten sent to us with like female physician and the footer. So like internally, they've got a separate contract, right, for a female physician. We've seen contracts. That's a bad one.
Wow.
No, it's like Operation Paperclip, where they, you know, paperclip Nazis coming into the rocket program so that we knew which ones to send to NASA and not to Nuremberg.
We've seen other ones where it's literally the same exact contract. One person got offered a signing bonus, the other one didn't. And we'll ask them, right, did you negotiate for that prior to coming to us? No, that's just what they offered me right out the gate, right? And so there's a lot of employers like to tout this, you know, this is our uniform contract. Everybody signs it. It's standard for everyone. It's not. I mean, it's not on compensation. It's not on language. You see adjustments all the time. And honestly, if they're doing a good job, they shouldn't be the same, right? They should be trying to craft these things for everybody to make sure that they can retain you guys and keep you in the system. If somebody needs a Friday off, right, that's probably better than trying to recruit somebody else for another 3 or 4 years, right? Take the person you can get at 80%, change your contract, and get them in the door. So there's not a lot that's standard, I guess, is the overarching tone for me.
Well, I'm going to say, like, first of all, how, you know, as far as talking out loud about how to remedy that, it's so hard because, you know, talking about money is like talking about sex. And so people hate to share their own, like, well, oh, I'm getting paid this.
Well, you could go to Vegas and talk about it at the same time.
There you go. So how do we, I mean, how do we get transparency in the industry other than people? I mean, you guys see it because you see the contracts. So there's a big plug for you, for people to go to people like you. You know, your company to say, no, this is not fair. You're not getting even close to what the industry or everyone else in your group's getting.
Yeah, I think it takes a couple of things. It takes education, first of all, right? I mean, they have to understand what work RVUs are and what a normal collection rate is on that, what a conversion factor is. And until they understand what they're even looking at, I think that's step one. Step two is you have to have access to the data, right? And so that's one of the things that we're passionate about. You know, you can go on and just get, you know, you can buy access to the data from us, third party, as well as our own internal data. So we're collecting this stuff and verifying it all the time. And we're turning around and saying, hey, here it is, right, for you guys. And some of that stuff is free, right? Just go use it. Unfortunately, there are some of the big benchmarks out there that won't sell or provide the data to physicians, right? So they're using it internally for fair market value audits and things like that, but they will not turn around and give that to you to say, hey, yeah, you can verify this, that it is fair, that it is median. So I think the more
like MGMA.
So MGMA does give it both ways, but like Sullivan and Cotter, AMGA, and some others, you can't get access to that stuff unless you are an employer. So
really?
Yes. Imagine like if you call it up, you can't buy it. Yeah.
So you're saying that big healthcare systems are actually, you know, part of negotiating in a sense in bad faith, using all of their power.
Yeah.
To, you know, yet they don't make money unless a physician or an APP with a medical license signs something and writes an order or prescribes a medication. Everything like this is what drives me crazy. Everything in healthcare is on the license of the practitioner. That is the funnel through which all the cash flows. And we as physicians did a terrible job about 20 years ago when we're like, I just want to see patients. I don't want to run a business. Well, if you give the business away to somebody else, you have now made yourself an employee. So you have just given away all of your financial power, just gave it away because I'm the noble guy that just wants to see patients. Well, you know what? I don't want to just see patients. I want to see patients and I want to make money and I want to be paid a fair market wage. I didn't go into medicine to get rich, but I didn't go into medicine to get poor either.
Right. Yeah, it's difficult when, you know, we see contracts, for example, that'll say, okay, we can't pay you past the 75th percentile of a survey, right? That's fairly common, right? Because they want that as kind of this audit proof. If anybody ever audits us, look, we tried to keep them underneath of that. Well, what happens over 20 years, like you're talking about, is all of a sudden the 75th percentile becomes the 100th percentile, right? Because now everybody's employed. We're capping all the comp. And so we're just compressing everything to the middle. And so the outliers are going to disappear, right? We're not going to give you access to that data. We're going to submit it to this data source, but you don't get to have access to it either, right? So I think there's a lot of problems there. And oh yeah, by the way, GDP, right? healthcare is like almost 20% of our entire GDP, and all of that is funneled back to what you just said, right? A physician license for the most part. And then also you guys have no leverage. Like, it doesn't make sense, right? Supply and demand and economics would say that you guys have the most leverage in the entire country, right? And yet it's not being utilized. And so that's honestly the reason we exist, right? Is to try to empower, try to educate, try to say, hey, you know, try to go use that power that you've got and make sure you're paid fairly, right? Make sure you get a schedule that works for you and don't burn out on us, because we all need you guys, right? We want you to be there when we're sick and when we need help. And so it's just the current model just doesn't seem to be working real well, right, for you guys.
Do you guys do any work on the litigation side or negotiation side
when
the crap
bad.
Hits the fan?
Yeah, so we're purely transactional, right? So we help with data consulting, right, front end work. If you need litigation, you're going to walk into the courtroom. We certainly have a network of people, right, that we would say, hey, this is a good right firm to work with, and we'll connect you with that. But it's actually more rare, right? I mean, usually people walk. Right. So they kind of vote with their feet type of thing. And they don't actually go through litigation because they don't want to waste their time and their money. What they want to do is go find an employer or situation that works for them. So that's the more common scenario and how that plays out.
So any suggestions for, you're right, most of the time doctors, it's like a pain in the butt. It's a pain in the ass. It's usually you're burned out or you're emotionally traumatized. I'm just going to leave it at that. And it's easy to just walk. But for those people that want to fight through this, do you like review the contract with them and say, yeah, you're getting screwed. I think it's worth trying to get this out of that. How often does that happen where people want to fight and for their at least what's in their contract?
Yeah, quite a bit. So, I mean, we see renegotiation, right, and kind of this exit planning maybe a lot, where it's we're going to go in, we're going to evaluate the situation, we're going to say you're, you know, underpaid or the contract stinks on this part, right? And the employer is either going to come to terms with you, play ball, right, to some extent, meet in the middle somewhere, or you're going to be leaving, right? And usually when groups do that, they have a little more power, right? But also everybody within that group doesn't always have the same preference and priority and how hard they want to push. And so, you know, there's discussions around physician unions and all of that. And I think sometimes that works, but I think if you talk to other folks that have been in unions for a while, I mean, I don't know that fits the model either, because each physician is so different on specialty, right? I mean, you can imagine trying to get all the physicians together. I mean, by specialty is different, by location is different. And so I think you've really got to continue to take ownership of this on a individual level, right? To try to fight for what's important to you. But we definitely work with groups. We definitely work with exits and renegotiations. Yeah.
What about something that seems impossible to negotiate on your own other than in a union or a group? So I'm thinking like nurses, do they have contract negotiations every couple of years for cost of living raise?
Yeah.
How do you put that into a contract or how do you negotiate? Because that's usually never in there. And I'm like, I can't remember the last time
never.
We got a raise.
No.
I mean, is there any suggestions?
Well, here's what'll happen. If your reimbursements go down, right? Your employer is going to come to you and they're going to say, "Hey, fair market value change, right? CMS flipped the fee schedule, or reimbursements fell, or we lost a good payer in the market, or whatever it is. And here's your amendment, right?" That happens all the time. Or COVID happens, and all of a sudden we have the furlough and cut costs and all that stuff. So, by example, right? We know that that's how they want to handle it. And so our suggestion is you're rarely going to get cost of living built into a contract, right? But rates constantly change, right? MGMA data changes, fair market value changes. We know in some specialties, right, supply and demand goes up and down based on how many got into residency and all that stuff. And so if you're not paying attention to the market and not watching that, you could be 2, 3, 4, 5 years behind, right, what current value is. Like, we were just dealing with the surgeon who had a conversion factor, so the payment per work RVU, at 65, the newest data sets are at 90, right?
And he's been
at 65 for 10 plus years, right? And so you're like, that's 38%. That's a huge number annually. And because you were just what I'll call asleep at the wheel, so to speak, just doing the job because you're so busy, you've lost out on, you know, years worth of compensation. And so I think there's the only way to do it is to pay attention to it.
So can you help our listeners pay attention to it? You said you have data, because it would be nice, you know, having finally worked with rational fee-only financial planners, it's just like, they're not selling us anything. Yep. You know, they're like, you're an idiot, don't buy that. Or, you know, they say it in a nicer way. I don't say, you know, BS free. But so can people like subscribe, you know, get their contract renewed, and then like have kind of a subscription where they stay up on the market and all this, because it's really important that we mind our business. In other words, mind the business of this side, even as employees, because no one else is going to do that for you.
Right. So so if you go to just resolve.com, right, you log in, you create a free account, you're going to get access to the verified data that we have, right? Like our information, we give it back to you. There's no cost to that. You're going to plug in your specialty. It's going to ping you, right? It's going to shoot you an email every time more data comes in, right? It's going to say, hey, there's five more contracts in your specialty. Go take a look at it. So that's one way. If you need access to the survey data, like the third-party MGMA stuff, that you've got to pay for, obviously. Again, you can do that on subscription as you need, right? Log in, find it. There's a dashboard. You can click through all online. You don't have to talk to anybody, right? We're not going to bother you. Just here it is for you. Go be empowered. If when you see that, right, and you're like, ugh, I don't know how to either interpret it, or I'm really below market, I need to know why, we can do more custom reporting for you, right? We can help you get engaged with an attorney, right? We feel like we have a level of service that should be for everybody. And we think monitoring, kind of that step one, is extremely important to just know where you're at. So I would encourage all your listeners, go to resolve.com, create your free account, at least check it out, right? Maybe you're in a good spot. There's calculators you can use. You can say, hey, my tail coverage says this. Is that good, bad, or ugly? My non-compete says this. Is that good or bad? All that's free, right? And go get some free advice and then see if you need help from there.
No, we cannot stress. I mean, we can't talk about it too much in detail, nor do I want to. It's a ship that sailed in our lives. But it really is, when you get into nasty separation, I mean, it's essentially a divorce. I mean, me and I worked for a company for 25 years, and it's like you're splitting the kids up. I mean, it can be very, very contentious. We know people now from all over the country, having done the podcast, that it's not unique to our situation. It is a plight common to man, where it gets real. It can get, I mean, the contract was obvious, and there's companies that just like, no, we're not doing that. I'm like, well, you're in breach of contract. We don't care. We have in-house attorneys. You have to hire a lawyer. We'll just bleed you. I mean, we have seen that.
Yeah. It's the same thing with the, you know, there's a law in California that says you can't have them. We're going to stick it in the contract anyway, right? The I don't care mentality and the we're bigger than you, we're the deeper pocket than you. I mean, it's definitely out there. It's not every organization. I don't want to paint every single health system with a bad brush, but it's a lot of them, right? And so you have to be extremely careful. And if you don't take the time to invest in yourself on this topic, right, I think you're just setting yourself up for potential disaster right down the road.
Well, especially if you're only going to be at your, you know, you're going to have four or five at minimum jobs in your career of 20 to 40 years. I mean, you are going to leave. You got to know. And it's, you know, leaving on good terms and moving around and all that's great. But most people leave medicine or leave the job because they think they're getting screwed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
No, sure. So are you involved in it any other way than we talked about? I mean, you review the contracts at the beginning of employment, can have that information for people to check out online and help provide some direction if they need to take further action in reviewing it. Is there any other services you provide that I might have missed?
Yeah, no, I mean, those are the big ones. Obviously, we do education, right? So, if, you know, there's residency programs or, you know, societies that are out there. I mean, we'll come in and just do webinars and talk and chat, right? We feel like that's really on mission for us, right? We don't charge for those things, you know, unless we're traveling, we like to be paid to get there, right?
That type right. of deal.
But other than that, no, I mean, we just feel like rising tide, right, on this topic, right, is good for everybody, right? And so we just think that if physicians get back, at least in the driver's seat on education and knowing where they're supposed to be, that'll solve a lot of the downstream effects, right, of some of the burnout and the people leaving, you know, all the time. It's not going to solve all of it. I mean, we don't think we're that good, right? There's bigger problems in the system, but we think it's certainly step one in kind of protecting that career.
Well, and
absolutely.
And it's better for the health systems. You know, the turnover and churn is super expensive and unbelievably disruptive. Yeah. And I, you know, it's the Costco model. You go to Costco, their employees are happy because they expect you to work. The guys that don't work don't last. And everyone else, they pay a fair market wage to be nice. Yeah. So they're nice. I mean, it's.
You know, and I think the systems that recognize that, right, to your point, I mean, there are some systems that probably like me and us better than others, right? But the systems that I think understand what you just said, that, hey, we have to get this right. And if we don't get it right on the front end, we're going to have so much, you know, cost in retention / recruitment, right, that it's better for us to customize these things early. It's better for us to negotiate early on and pay these fair wages because, you know, what's more expensive? You know, locum coverage is more expensive when you've got four people that walk out on you. Right. When you could have just solved it right away. And so there are some that are coming to that, I think, conclusion, but it's certainly not the majority yet.
Hmm. Yeah. It's mind blowing. I mean, watched a place lose their entire oncology department.
Yep. Just
poof.
Yep.
Went away. And the competitor across, literally across the street, went to another oncology group in another town and said, hey, send us two oncologists. Boom. Immediate market capture. It was fascinating to witness.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
That doesn't make sense, right? I mean, from a business standpoint, they should never want that to happen, right?
No, never. And it's just we could go on and on, but I'm not playing the shitty things that have happened in the past game anymore. Because we have moved on from there. But it's a great lesson, and if we would have known that a group like you actually existed.
Oh, there wasn't any. I think back,
you know, you just have to find a lawyer.
Plus years, there wasn't any. We got the paper and like, sounds good. Let's try to read it. I think maybe somebody had.
No, we had a lawyer. We had a lawyer review it. But you know, this was an American company we're working for. We were in Canada. He's like, yeah, it's a bunch of boilerplate. It looks good. What the hell's tail? Literally, he's like, tail coverage. That's hilarious. And you know, it was in there. Thank God.
So we, you know. There's specialists in everything, right? There's specialists in medicine. There's specialists in this area too. And so we always joke a little bit of like, hey, don't hire your cousin that does divorces all day to do your contract. But what you just said is so true because a lot of people do that, right? It's like, oh, well, so-and-so's spouse is an attorney and they can look at it. But if they don't understand what work RVUs are, they don't have access to that data. They don't know what tail coverage is. I mean, all those things are the value you should be getting, right? Out of a consultation and out of a review, right? It shouldn't just be, right? Yeah, it's boilerplate and it looks fine. Right, that doesn't help.
That's a really important point because you don't know what you don't know. And if you don't never even heard of like RVUs and tail coverage, why would you even think to ask? And so
Jeff Bezos did not use LegalZoom for his divorce.
No, I don't think so. No.
Exactly.
So I just want to get back to a little bit of the nuts and bolts on money. Are there people that still sign contracts that are a percentage of collections?
Yeah, some. So usually it's private practice, but there's some systems that will still do collection models. Yeah. But it's very rare. It's moving more towards that work RVU system and model.
Wow. The work RVU makes sense because you could bury 100% of your financial information in a percentage of collections. Like you could literally pay people nothing. You would have to have, you know, a tax auditor going through those numbers, an accountant going through those numbers to know. I mean, I heard a story. One of my former colleagues, his brother was Luke Duke on the Dukes of Hazzard. Yeah. I can't remember if it was Hasbro or Mattel came out with the little figurines, you know, the little, like the dolls, the play, the Luke and they were paid points on profits on the toys. But magically, they never made any profit, so they never got paid. Yeah. And so instead of getting points on gross, they got and you sit there and you go, okay, you're telling me you're selling like tens of millions of dollars of Bo and Luke Duke toys in 1981, and you're making $0. I mean, it was just amazing.
Yeah. Well, that it's interesting. So there's a similar point on that is you'll look at the data on some specialties, not all, but you look at some, and if you looked at the comp to collection ratio, right, like how much they're paying a physician versus how much they're collecting and bringing in, it'll be over 100%, right? So it'll say like cardiology, we can pay 110% of the collections that come in. Like, well, how can that be, right? Well, it's because they don't report everything in the same bucket, right? The physician service might only be, right, whatever, $500,000 a year, but they're collecting all these ancillaries on the cath lab and everything else, but that doesn't show up. So it looks like we're losing money on you, physician. So we need to keep pushing you down because look, we just paid you more than you brought in. And it's like, well, that doesn't make sense. Like, look at the big picture, right? Look at all the surgeries the orthopedic surgeon did, or the ophthalmologist in my case, or, you know, whatever it is. The revenue pools, right, on a collection model, you got to be really careful on what they're calculating that off of.
Yeah. Well, why do you think there's tons of surgeons that own surgery centers? They want the facility fee. The facility fee is a huge nut in this stuff. Mm-hmm. You know, so they're willing to own an entirely separate business just to really get all of the collections. Like it's common sense, but there's.
I'm glad you're talking.
Corporate medicine just drives me crazy, and so I love you guys. Should have like Resolve should be kind of like this middle ages shield with a big claymore sword or something on there.
I'll put you in touch with our marketing people. Yeah, you can start to work on that. Yeah,
I'd love to do it because it's really true. It sounds terrible, but you really have to go into these business negotiations trusting nobody.
Yeah.
And physicians are usually really trusting. It's like, oh, well, this was the university hospital that trained me and they were really good. Yeah, but you never worked with their business side. You know nothing about that.
Yeah.
You know? And so
and that is a problem. I mean, the whole mentor-mentee, right, thing happens a lot where it's, well, I'm going to go negotiate with the person who is my chief, right, for the last 4 years. And how does that work? And, you know, it's difficult, I think, for a lot of folks coming out of training to flip that switch, right, and say, okay, now I'm peer. Right. When I bill insurance, they don't ask if I've been on a training for a year or 20 years. Right. It's just here's my CPT code and I send it in. Right. And so there's a lot of that right in the market where people are hesitant, especially if they're going back to the same institution that they work for, you know, or in training.
Oh, that's a good point. Yes. Because you have that already relationship instead of being just an anonymous person.
Yeah. If I could, I don't know if May has any more questions, but really, a lot of this is you are worth way more than you think you are, number one. Number two, you have to get an expert because you don't know what you don't know. That's really critical. I mean, we're not trained in law. We're not trained in finance. We're trained in medicine. We have a very specialized, very narrow toolkit as far as our tools. And you might be the smartest person in the room in IQ points, but you may be the dumbest when it comes to financial negotiations. So that's really important. And always protect your interests because no one else is going to protect them for you. I cannot stress that enough. That's just really, it sounds selfish or whatever. No, it's not. That's how you protect your family.
Yeah. No, I agree with all those. I mean, if you can go out and empower yourself, like you said, usually the smartest person in the room, right? But you still have to have access to all the data, right? And all the information to make sure you can process that and, you know, use it how you need to. So I think you're spot on.
Where can our listeners find you so that they can grab the claymore and the shield?
Yeah, so they can get that shield. So resolve.com is the starting point, right? That's our website. We're on all the social stuff, right? Instagram, Facebook, all those other ones, right? You can probably just Google it, search it, find it. But resolve.com is where I tell them to go first, right? We talked about it before, but go check out some of the data points. Go get a notification every time a new contract comes in, right? These are verified things. There's not recruitment, you know, jargon there. There's nothing that's you know, not transparent. And so I would say go empower yourself a little bit, take a look at it. And if you have any questions, you know, reach out and let us know.
Perfect. We'll put all the links obviously in the show notes and in our social platforms too. Thanks for being here and helping us physicians, especially the upcoming ones, do a better job at protecting themselves and knowing what to look for.
And just being happier. Like if you don't have to commute an extra hour a day each direction, it makes your life way better.
Right.
Yeah.
Happy physician, happy employer, happy patient. Everyone wins. Absolutely. All right. Agreed. Thanks, Kyle.
Thank you. See you guys.
All right. Thank you, Kyle, for coming on and addressing physician contracts. To our listeners, you can find Kyle and his team at all the links in the episode's description. We will post all that. But the place to start is resolve.com.
Mm-hmm. And we hope today's episode empowers you with the knowledge to navigate your contracts more confidently. Not like we did. It's crucial, and we know it, to have Kyle or experts like Kyle in your corner, ensuring that you're treated fairly and your career is on the right path, finding those things out that you didn't even think to ask. So for more BS-free takes on medicine, healthcare, and everything in between, stay tuned to BS-free MD and write to us, because you can get a listener shout out just like Renee is. So thanks, Renee. You reached out to us last week to give us some feedback on our latest newsletter. Thank you so much for the kind words and appreciation for what we do. Thanks for being part of the community. We appreciate it. I guess by the time this comes out, it'll be more than last week, maybe last month. But anyway, keep writing. And thanks to everybody else. We'll see you around.
It's no secret that medicine is a bit uptight. That's why Tim and I created BS Free MD, to mix things up a little and have fun in the process. Besides, we are having these exact same discussions all the time, so we thought we might as well invite everyone to the party. If you really like us, you can get plenty more and maybe see one of Tim's cool tattoos on our Instagram or Facebook pages at BS Free MD. See you next time.
We try to keep BS-Free MD as raw and real as possible. We can't be held responsible for any medical decisions or discussions had as a result of what you've heard on the show. We know, bummer. But the truth is, we really do care about your questions. So feel free to reach out to us by email at doc@bsfreemd.com.